It's called wokeness, and it's a plague. A plague that places tyranny before freedom, criminality over virtue, and hate over love. It's a plague that threatens what millions have died for.
Victory at all costs. Victory in spite of all terror. Victory however long and hard the road may be.
We will fight it. We will defeat it. We will eradicate it.
Ladies and gentlemen,
introducing the least woke man in America.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Least Woke Man in America, the podcast dedicated to fighting against the meatless, gunless, godless, crime-ridden, censorship-filled hellhole the American left is trying to create in the United States of America. And you know, many of you who listen to my podcast know I use the metaphor sometimes that we're drinking from a dangerous fountain as far as the beliefs, the values, the behavior that you see in today's culture that a lot of us can't relate to. And we can't relate to it, and we're not going to apologize for not relating to it. We're not going to be less judgmental. We're not going to be more open-minded because we know a lot of it is weird, sick, and unhealthy. And unhealthy is such an important word in all of this. Because when you use the word unhealthy, it diffuses people. If it becomes about politics or parties or religions, the egos flare up, pride flares up, people's defense mechanisms flare up. But healthy is such an important word with all of this. And that fountain, a big part of that fountain that we talk about, I really think as we see the events unfold in front of us, Karl Marx, the philosopher, the loser, is a huge part of that fountain. And now many of you say, who is Karl Marx? And that's a great question because this podcast is almost like the try to make it like the Henry Ford of podcasters, where it's just dedicated to the average person. Remember Henry Ford wanted like the average person to own a car? This podcast is dedicated to letting the average person, even though it's certainly listened to by very successful people, know the true story of what's going on in this crazy world that we live in. So Karl Marx, he's a German philosopher born in the early 1800s. He was an atheist, but I mean, he came from a long lineage of Jewish rabbis, but he was an atheist himself. Here's the story that I was fed. And I'm finding out as time goes on, I was not the only one fed this story. Because I, you know, as you can imagine being doing this stuff, I talk to people about politics all the time. And I've been telling people, remember the story we heard about Karl Marx in middle school and high school? That the story was, it's so misleading, I can't even talk about it without laughing. So he had a sick child laying in bed, and he looked across the river. I can't remember what river it was in Germany, maybe the Rhine, whatever. And he had no money for his sick child, and the child lay there dying. And he looked across the river, and he saw all these wealthy people going into a big ballroom for a gala. And he became enraged. He became enraged at the inequity. And that's when he sat down and he wrote the Communist Manifesto about workers seizing the means of production and from the wealthy and making everyone equal. That is so far from the truth. It's not even funny. And like I said, I thought, you know, was that just Central Square High School in upstate New York? No, I talked to other people. They thought, that's not the story. No, that is not the story at all. Like I said, Karl Marx is a loser. And there's multiple people who have documented this. Most recently, I've been listening to Unwoke by Ted Cruz. Great book so far. And I mean, whether you like Ted Cruz or not, or his personality, or the fact he ran against Trump, even though now he's a Trump ally, he came from a Cuban family, and he goes into that in the book, and it's just incredible the stuff he has personally experienced. His father fled from Cuba, just to show you how much things have changed and how much people can learn another language if they really want to. He talks about his father got to Texas, enrolled in a college. If he didn't pass, he didn't get decent grades, he was going to be sent back to Cuba. I won't get into details. So he took a class of English people learning Spanish, reverse engineered it so he could learn English as fast as possible. So if the teacher said, you know, milk is leche, he would, you know, because he knew the Spanish side of it. Then he started to realize in English, leche is milk. You know, so what I mean? So so that just shows if someone really has determination, he learned English, he graduated from school, he got an engineering degree, I believe it was. But the stories Ted Cruz have in the book is incredible. Here's one, for example. His grandmother was a teacher in Cuba, and she saw this firsthand. The Cuban soldiers would come into the classroom, and they'd tell the kids, close your eyes and pray to God for candy. Kids would close their eyes. They'd say, open your eyes, no candy on their desk. And then they'd say, close your eyes and pray to Fidel for candy. And as their eyes were closed, the soldiers would walk around, put candy on their desk. So when they opened the eyes, they thought praying to Fidel Castro was bringing them candy. True story. So in Cruz's book, Thomas Sowell also goes into this in his book. You know, Thomas Sowell, he's just an absolute legend. For all of you who want to de-woke yourselves, who want to de-nonsense yourself, who want to drink from a fountain of truth and wisdom, rather than a fountain of toxic nonsense like Marx, Thomas Sowell is the way to go. So here is what Cruz says in Unwoke. Anyone who reads the most charitable biography of Karl Marx will find the man was hardly a good example for anyone, let alone someone whose ideas should serve as the basis for a global political movement. From the moment Marx was old enough to be responsible for himself, he refused to, instead taking advantage of everyone in his life, refusing to work or become a productive member of society. He lived in a series of squalid apartments in different parts of Europe, writing poetry about the allure of Satan, yes, seriously, as well as long, turgid pieces of political philosophy, for which he would soon become a political name. He was a drunk, which, and he rarely bathed. His children went hungry because of their father's refusal to get a job to support his family. The little money that he did have came at first from Marx's parents. Then, when his parents died, Marx began mooching off a series of wealthy benefactors, most notably Frederick Engels, who would serve as the co-author of Marx's most famous work, The Communist Manifesto. Now, I don't have time to read all this. Maybe I'll read all of it at some point, make a YouTube video out of it. And I'll put the entire excerpt on my Facebook and Twitter and social media pages. But yes, this is what many people notice with him. There's even a Prussian spy because, you know, Prussia eventually became Germany. But at the time, other European governments were starting to notice the power and the influence Marx was having. So their intelligence agencies, like just like today, if they see an influential person, they want to get a file on the person. It's kind of creepy, but that's the way the world works. So even a Prussian police spy report that was commissioned on Marx in the mid-1840s, as the officers of Marx found, washing, grooming, and changing his linens are things he rarely does, and he likes to get drunk. He has no fixed times for going to sleep or waking up. So the man was a completely void of any type of discipline, any type of, any type of productivity. And if you look at his writings, his writings are just completely incoherent. And he was just very neglectful. He had six children. Two of his daughters committed suicide, and two of his sons died of conditions which I think were related to just chronic neglect. Chronic neglect. Now, why is this so important? Well, I named the podcast "Karl Marx Was a Total Loser and He's Raising Your Children," because if Karl Marx is having rabid, this is the mind, this is the soul, this is the psychology behind the man who has an incredible influence today. Wokeness is an appendage, a newly packaged form of Marxism. And why is that? Because the root of so much of Marxism is the oppressed versus the oppressor. For example, in the story, that half-baked story we're all told in school, like I mentioned before, in that story, Karl Marx was the oppressed, his kids dying, everybody's rich, yada, yada. Well, to a very psychologically immature, dysfunctional person like Marx was, that's how everything always seems. They're always the one who's being screwed. There is such a lack of appreciation for maturity and productivity in their mind. I don't know what the psychological condition is, that it instantly, reactively turns into jealousy and the other people. It was just luck. And luck is important in life. But there is such a lack of appreciation in what it takes to get there, and appreciation for other people's property, other people's time. And you see with Mark, I'm sure he's like Bill de Blasio. I can almost guarantee, I can bet $5,000 Karl Marx was late wherever he went. I can guarantee it. Like Bill de Blasio, like Bill Clinton, like so many other people on the left. Just abject lack of respect for other people's time. Not that, you know, all of us are late from time to time, but at least attempt to be on time out of respect for other people. So this was a dangerous individual. This was a really repulsive individual, a psychologically not healthy individual who the left, again, garners so much of support. You know, one of the cornerstones of Marxism, and this is so important for all of you who have kids, is that everyone's the children and the community and a society belong to everyone. They belong to everyone. That is terrifying. That should terrify you. Because this guy couldn't raise his own kids. He wouldn't work. He wouldn't support them. Now, two died of suicide. Two died of neglect. Yet this is the guy, and that supports that idea. And that's, and I'm not, and this is dead serious. Because our teachers, you can go on Google repeating this. The reason why they think an eight-year-old should be able to talk to them about changing their genitalia, not the parents, is because, well, there are our kids too. Now, the teachers reporting that, repeating that, they don't even know. A lot of times they don't know they're repeating Marxism. That's how ingrained. That's what I'm trying to say, is that there's so many people in state education departments and other government institutions and media institutions where Marxist ideas and beliefs are ingrained to them, usually through second and tier, third tier Marxist writers. Or my favorite is Marxist scholar, a Marxist scholar. You know, one of the ways we're going to defeat all this Marxism and wokeness, we can do it without ever firing a shot, without ever killing another person, unlike other battles that have taken place by humans. Well, why do I say that? Because, like Ted Cruz points out, Marxism is most rampant in colleges among, like, the what I call the right brain people. You know, they always say the right brain is more creative. The art, the history, the political science department. Don't get me wrong. There's tons of engineers, scientists, accountants, whatever, around the world call themselves Marxists. Get it, more of an ego trip. As far as I'm concerned, they want to be called the Marxist. Because if you say you're a Democrat, Republican, whatever, people, yeah, but I'm the Marxist. And the Marxists know so much. But so what Cruz points out, it's really the most right, the most fertile ground for it is the right young, right brain people, because it can be chopped apart so easily with ration and logic, which really they get all the way back to Rush Limbaugh in the 1980s, when the social, the influencer, you call him the first influencer, there's no social media, it was all radio at the time, where he could sit in for 3 hours a day and just chew this stuff up with rationale, intellect, and humor. And that's why it's so easy to defeat, because in a logical, rational world, and then you throw in a heavy dose of common sense, none of it makes sense. So, you know, this is all going to be beat with what I call the bullshit blowtorch, where all of us continually hear this pablum, blah, 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 this regurgitated, so much of it's regurgitated. I hear, it's so painful for me. I hear such smart people I know in my personal life, and it's just regurgitation. Does it happen on the right? Yes, but not as bad as the left. It's like their lips are moving and they don't even know what they're saying. And the younger they are, the worse it is. And it's just such cockamamie horseshit. And like I said, it's got to be a bullshit blowtorch and just blow it all up. And if you do that, 10 of them who believe it, if the argument disintegrates, sooner or later, common sense kicks in. And even if 3 or 4 repent in the foolishness, that's all you need. You're always going to have a 10 or 20% that are kooks in this country. That's no big deal. You still, the normal people win all the elections. You still end up with a healthy society, but at least they're contained. And so what cracks me up is the idea that there's Marxist scholars. What in the hell is a Marxist scholar? You saw the profile. You just heard the profile of the man that I described, who was Karl Marx. Who in God's name wakes up in the morning and says, yes, I want to be a scholar of that man? And again, back to the bullshit blowtorch. Think about this. In Ivy League circles, in, you know, far left schools or academia, maybe even outside the Ivy League, Stanford or UC Berkeley or Chicago or schools like that. If somebody walks in and they're a Marxist scholar, they literally carry more weight than, say, some young guy that went in the army and then used the GI Bill of the programs that they have, becomes like an aircraft mechanic, right? Or becomes a civil engineer, but it's like a fourth tier school. It's like Indiana State, but it's still civil engineering. He's still going to build and design bridges. Or the person before is still going to fix planes. Or it could be, you know, a woman who was in the military and worked really hard part-time, even as a single mother, went to a community college, becomes a nurse, has a real job. I'm talking real job, real substance in all three circumstances. Yet the type of people who are having the most influence on this country would all gravitate to the Marxist scholar. And the one piece of oh my God, he's a Marxist scholar. Have you heard? I heard his name, like he was born Tommy, but he's changed his name to Zabias as part of a revolution against his parents. It all needed to be destroyed, broken down, and rebuilt. It's the only way he can function. He can't stand living in the matrix, you know? So this is the world we live in now. I'm laying the foundation, who this guy was, who he was personally, which I think is so important. Because, oh, it doesn't matter his personal. Yeah, it does matter his personal life. Okay, if some guy changes my oil and my car, I'm not too worried about his personal life. As long as he changes, uses the type I tell him to use, and he puts the cap back on. Someone that's influencing the entire planet, which he is right now, his personal life and his personal character are important. There is no getting around that whatsoever. So we've laid the foundation here, and we see some of his beliefs. And what's that leading to right now as we speak in the real world? Well, first of all, we look at Israel and Gaza and Hamas and what is going on there. That is a textbook example, textbook of what Karl Marx is doing to this day and Marxist scholars and Marxist followers in the real world. What do I mean by that? Well, think about the essence of what took place there. Hamas went in and killed innocent people, went into people's houses, killed, raped, put babies in microwaves. There's no limit to the horrific, god-awful things that took place there. What did Israel do to respond after being attacked? They took their military and they went to fight Hamas, another militant group. So it's military to military while trying to avoid as many civilian deaths as possible. There is one, no denying that, and two, there is no moral equivalency between, it's like September 11th, flying planes in the buildings people just got off the elevator, sitting at their cubicles with chaps on and polo shirts, and the women are in blouses, they're unarmed, they're sitting at their computers, doing chit-chat around the coffee maker, and boom, they're all dead. So we went into Afghanistan with our military to fight another military. So there's no moral equivalency. There's no amount of PhDs and mental gymnastics that can make any of that make sense, period. But on the left, around the world, not just in America, that is not the narrative. The narrative is, once you cast someone as the oppressor, when that case is Israel, and the Hamas is the oppressed, this is the psychological danger. I know before I was being jovial and making fun of this stuff, but the deep, dark danger in all this is that once someone is established as the victim, as the oppressed class, there is no limit to what they're allowed to do because they are the oppressed. And they can do what's horrific. Yeah, but they're oppressed. And this is everywhere now. I mean, look at the stories of shoplifting in this country. You literally have stories. And again, this is not making the news. Talk to anyone you know personally, works in a big box store or a grocery store. People constantly walk out, many times minorities, but also white people, with a grocery cart full of stuff, and the stores refuse to call the police. Why? Well, because, first of all, the police, especially in blue states, really can't do anything, as horrific as that sounds. But we have decided that that is a oppressed person. And it's really scary. BLM was part of Marxism, of course. But the BLM wasn't even as bad as wokeness. It was falls under the umbrella of wokeness. But that established one group of people, Black people, being the oppressed. And again, now that you're the oppressed victim, there's no limit. Wokeness in Marxism, there's no limit. There really is no limit. The only people that seem to not be the oppressed is white American men, especially they're conservative or Christian or whatever. Those seem to be the ultimate lottery winners, which statistically is not true at all. At one minute, they're making fun, you know, making that the story. The next minute, they're making fun of people who I just described as all being a bunch of fentanyl addicts who are dropping dead. So, I mean, there's a little bit of conflict in that story as well. But so you have why everybody's in a battle to be victimhood, because here's a key point. Here's what I call a BFB, a Brian Foster beauty. If you are an oppressed class in a country run by a government where there is no limit to the amount of spending, borrowing, printing money, you name it, that is like being a trust fund baby. If you think about it, that the people that are walking out of these grocery stores or these box stores, free stuff, go back to usually a free housing, they get free medical care, they can go to college for free. That's like being a trust fund kid. If they do have a job, everybody tiptoes around them and doesn't want to fire them because they don't want to get sued and they don't want to be not woke. Just like the boss's kid, like the rich kid whose dad owns the factory, he can do whatever he wants, be late, whatever. No one says anything. It's the exact same thing if you think about it. It's really incredible. So this is ubiquitous now. And I think a lot of people are finally waking up to it. And it flies into the face so much of our culture. You hear the term thrown around so much, Judeo-Christian, Judeo-Christian. We're losing our Judeo-Christian values. That is a big deal. What does that mean in essence? Even if you don't go to church, you struggle with the Bible, you're not a Christian. Well, the base of it is even in the book of Genesis, it talks about how human beings were made in God's image. There is a distinct respect and amount of dignity towards the individual, because everything with Marxism and wokeness is group oriented. Certain groups are good, other groups are bad. If you're part of the bad group, like I mentioned with the Israelis, there's no limit to what, if your babies get thrown in the microwave, so be it, because you have been labeled as the oppressor. It's all emotional. It is not based on facts and logic, which are thrown out the window, as opposed to the Judeo-Christian idea, even the Ten Commandments about bearing false witness. If you have a trial, you want to get to the truth about that individual before you do something to convict and punish that individual. You want the facts and circumstances to be true, so real justice plays out. That's why just social justice, I call it emotional justice, evil justice, whatever you want to do, there is no justice taking place there. There's no justice taking place. And so when it's all group and emotional and victims and the oppressed, and then comes the spigot, where when you are the oppressed, with the financial part, there is no limit to how much money you're allowed to take from the quote-unquote oppressor. And there's no limit to how much you're allowed to restrict the rights of the oppressor. Don't forget that part. Ben Shapiro has a great saying he uses now, the oppressed oppressors. Because you literally have people who walk around with a story cooked up in their head in the wealthiest country in the history of mankind, whose constitution was designed to give power to the individual, to the people over the state. And they want the state, they have a story in their head that they are oppressed, and then they want the state to use its power to oppress their oppressors. So Shapiro used the word oppressed oppressor now. And it's just, we laugh we laugh because we have to for mental health reasons, one, and two, because it's just all so nuts for those of us who are more grounded, more logical, want to know the truth, have pride, take pride, and see the country and the system that we have been born into and what it has contributed to this world. And we see the threat to it, and we're just so concerned. And that is all sanity. This is all sanity. Do you realize Karl Marx's profile I just wrote? That's insanity. This is sanity. When a group of people, hyper-emotional, think there's no limit to what they should be allowed to do to you because they made up a story that you're evil and they're victims, to not be concerned about that is sanity. Islamophobia is sanity. Did you know that Islamophobia, do people get up in the morning and read a book talking jihad where non-believers should all die? To not be afraid of them is insanity. To be concerned about that is sanity. That's what wokeness has done in this country. You literally have situations where I mentioned before, the same people are being held hostage and walking on eggshells to people who are nuts. And it all started here. You can go the route, many have, it's satanic. And I know a lot of libertarians don't like to hear that word, and I get that. I respect all that. But I mean, if you juxtapose it compared to Judeo-Christian biblical teachings, it is the exact opposite in every regard. So either Marx, you can go the psychological route, being in a lineage of rabbis, was psychologically rebelling somehow, or, I mean, he did write poetry about Satan, but every part, the justice part is not real, the hygiene part is disgusting, the neglecting of children, the having no respect for other people's resources. If you look at the fruits of the Marx, I'm a big fruits person. You know, I was talking to someone recently about George Soros, and, you know, people, George Soros, he has this mystique about him, where people are always like, what do you think he's really up to? What do you think his master plan is? Like, you know, he's a chess player, 50 steps ahead of the rest of us. I said, all I have to do is look at the fruits. Here's a man whose DAs, who he sponsored, are responsible by during the time I've done this podcast, of innocent people being mugged, raped, beaten up, killed in multiple cities across this country because of the hyper-progressive district attorneys he supported. That is the fruits of his labor. I don't need to know how smart he is, how much money he has, anything. It's same with Karl Marx. How many people have come in contact with stuff? Oh my God, it changed my life so much for the better. And one more thing before I leave, where is Karl Marx being defeated right now? And this is so important. I really believe this. You can go the political route. What is politics? You elect politicians who pass laws. Some of them might have more charisma, the Trumps, the Marjorie Taylor Greens on the right, certain people on the left. But that's in essence what you're doing. There is a limit to, believe it or not, to how much politicians can influence as far as real substance. You take a guy like Jordan Peterson, where thousands of young men write to him, I make my bed in the morning now. There's a vibrancy that they have now. They're productive, a different outlook on life. Some type of light has come into their life. They're more, you know, more likely to hit the gym more and the bong less and do what their boss says and not talk back and set some type of goals for their life. That's how, in my opinion, so much more important than defeating Marxism. The kid that just got done of 4 years of Bernie Sanders-type professors at some state school. No one knows what happened to him. He was a senior in high school. He's a wrestling captain. He had a good-looking girlfriend. You know, he's all vibrant and happy. Next thing you know, they got to him for 4 years. He's a white male walking around with his hand in his pocket, staring at the floor, talking about how awful capitalism is and the oppressed and wokeness. And everyone's like, what in the hell? What fountain has he been drinking to? Well, right here in my hand, the printout from Karl Marx. And so then he comes in contact, hits rock bottom, and then either the drugs or even deeper down the rabbit hole with crazy left-wing nonsense, or that kid comes into a Jordan Peterson or a motivational speaker or a good boss or a good coach or a good pastor, and the ball gets rolling. Because no one who hates life and hates America and has a terrible outlook will want anything to do with Karl Marx. I've noticed when people have debate on social media, the worst people are the ones who are most magnetized to this nonsense. And you can tell very quickly, because that's why I came to the conclusion it's all a waste of time. There's something not right in their head. And I'm not apologizing for saying that. So this is serious stuff. And the blocking and tackling will be done. as I mentioned before, before we even get the guns and wars and civil wars, the bullshit blowtorch, just continually blowing this stuff up to the extent possible on social media, in podcasts, and the right-wing media, and in the nuclear immediate families across the country, where kids are set right by their parents. And that's why we try to contribute here, like I said, trying to be the Henry Ford of podcasters, so you really know what's going on, so we can drink from a healthy pot. Not that any means I'm perfect, I'm not God, but we dedicate time to what really works, knowing that in the human life, our own individual flaws, acts of God, bad luck, there's just some things that are inevitable. I don't care about intelligent AI, what that's going to bring, relationship problems, sickness, natural disasters. I get all that. But to have this on top of it is completely unnecessary. Like I said, we can't right now cure, for the most part, pancreatic cancer or Crohn's disease. We can't stop, you know, three Category 5 hurricanes from hitting the United States or a big earthquake in California. There are certain things we don't have control over. Okay, letting this nonsense control, dictate the greatest country in the history of mankind is completely, completely unacceptable. And the amazing part is so much of this, the reason it can even survive is because the wealth America creates, which creates so many institutions of higher learning and allows so many kids to go there after Pell Grants and financial aid and everything else, even though tuition prices are insane and they've been inflated from government programs, Sallie Mae, that kids are even allowed to find this and learn this stuff in the first place, especially, you know, spoiled, rich, upper-middle-class white kids. The woman who has two kids and needs to hurry up and get a degree, get a real job, does 2 years at a community college, she doesn't learn any of this. It's mainly the wealthy kids. That's the scary part. We learned that during the BLM riots, and Fox News would, you know, show the profiles of some of the white kids that are arrested. Their parents are all doctors and lawyers and whatever. It was laughable. It was laughable. Because, I mean, I'm going to talk about this again at some other point, but the reason we have so much wealth is because we allow what I call the Big Bang to take place. What is the Big Bang? If you look at the core of wealth creation, innovation, character, talent, that creates incredible products that we have since the railroad to Henry Ford to Bill Gates, even if you don't like them personally. That's the core of it. From that, you have accountants, lawyers, and doctors who make money off that. Then the government people and workers. And then you have on the far outer ring, the scumbag ring, I call it, the ones who try to, you know, stick their umbilical cord off it and make money off all that through social service programs and junk lawsuits. But the core of it is the Big Bang, not Karl Marx. It's the opposite of everything Karl Marx stands for, is what takes place in the Big Bang, where real economic growth takes place. And no country in the history of mankind has incubated more Big Bangs than the United States of America. And you and I benefit from that every single day, regardless of what Karl Marx says. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed this podcast. I know it's a long one. I got a lot on my mind. My big, beautiful head was overflowing, and I wanted to share so much of it with the rest of you. Until next time, I am the least woke man in America.